The Furies. Electra and Pylades were close to despair. Ever since the murders of Clytemnestra and Aegisthus, or the executions, as Electra preferred them to be known, Orestes had been behaving. The kindest word Electra could use was strangely. He had become unable to sit or stand still. He cared nothing for his appearance. He ate so little that he had grown dangerously thin. He talked to himself, mumbling words that neither his lover nor his sister could catch. He would disappear for weeks on end, going they knew not where. Aside from the distress this caused the two who loved him best, it was causing great concern throughout the Peloponnese. Orestes was now the rightful ruler of the region's most powerful kingdom. If he continued to present himself as unfit to reign, others were waiting, only too willing to cut him down and take his place. There had been an unspoken agreement for many years that Orestes should one day marry Hermione, the daughter of Menelaus and Helen, and thus unite the thrones of Sparta and Mycenae. The news that he had killed his own mother, Helen's sister, ended any prospect of such a match. Respect for the young man had been replaced by revulsion. "I know what we must do," said Pylades. "I must take him back to Delphi. Only the oracle can tell him how to heal his broken mind." It took Pylades much wheedling and persuasion, many promises and threats, before Orestes consented to go. They rode in a two-seater chariot, driven by a trusted servant. But all the same, it was a horrible journey. Orestes screamed, laughed maniacally, sobbed, and at one point stood up and tried to throw himself onto the road. It seemed that they were expected in Delphi. For the moment their chariot arrived, attendants in long white shifts came forward to escort them to the front of the queue for the oracle. They were followed to the entrance by murmurs of displeasure from those who had been waiting in the sun for hours and even days. The voice of the Pythia called them in.
"Orestes, Mycenae's new king, we know of your troubles. We know what it is you want to hear."
"I want to hear nothing,"
Orestes yelled directly to the priestess.
"I want silence. I want all the noises in my head to stop."
"Orestes, Orestes," Pylades put his arm around his friend. "Remember where you are. This ground is sacred."
"We are neither affronted nor offended, Orestes," said the Pythia. "The Lord Apollo commanded you to act as you did. You avenged the slaying of your father. Now the Erinyes torment you. They pursue you. They give you no peace. It is their purpose to punish and avenge blood crimes. They are almost as old as Mother Gaia herself. Even shining Apollo cannot call them back."
"But what can be done?" Pylades cried. "This cannot be fair or just."
"Orestes must complete two tasks. Only then will he be free to take up his throne, his life, and his destiny. First, by command of the great goddess Athena, he must go to the city of Athens. She alone can placate the Furies and balance the scales of justice. On the Acropolis, make sacrifices to the goddess, and then take yourselves to the heights of the Hill of Ares. Her works will be made manifest there. When this is completed, return here, and you will receive instruction as to your second task."
Orestes seemed not to hear. He had frozen stiff. Pylades thanked the priestess, turned him around, and pushed him out of the sulphurous cavern and into the open air. The sunlight on his face appeared to do Orestes good. The tension went out of his body, and for the first time in many months his mouth relaxed into something that might almost have been called a smile.